from a celebration this week in Russia, the 40th anniversary of the legendary Leningrad Rock Club. At its peak in the 1980s, the club was ground zero for a generation of Russians who chafed at Soviet-era restrictions. The authorities at that time could have shut it down, but as Charles Maines reports from St. Petersburg, the shows did go on.
In early 80s Leningrad, change was in the air, if you knew where to look. For Natasha Vasilieva Hall, that was through her lens. Then an aspiring young photographer, she found herself at a small apartment gathering where she spotted a guy with long hair and two sticks.
And he was a drummer. And when he started actually playing, and I heard it close up, and... oh, yeah.
An underground rock scene was gaining momentum in the city's shadows, despite few places to perform or record. Groups like Akvarium, Alisa, and Kino, heard here, celebrated their own tastes and styles, a combination that was rarely political, but struck authorities as inherently anti-Soviet. Their popularity demanded a government plan, says Kino bassist Alexander Titov.
There was a KGB agent who had an idea. Why not a place where all alternative culture could be gathered together and controlled?
The Leningrad Rock Club was born, a 600-seat theater where these bands could be seen, but more importantly, watched. On the one hand, the KGB monitored lyrics and surveilled the audience. On the other, the club was run by musicians and featured the best underground bands of the day. Despite bad acoustics and makeshift gear, the club was wildly popular, says Joanna Stingray, who is a young American musician, discovered it while traveling in the USSR in the mid-80s.
I wouldn't have known that there was a club in there if I didn't see the crowds outside. It was the place that everybody wanted to belong to and be part of, including me.
This year, a series of events have marked the club's legacy 40 years on, both as legendary stage and a key pivot point between what people wanted and what the state would allow. Stingray, the American, smuggled their recordings out for release in the U.S. What she later realized was that her efforts had ricocheted back to the other side of the Iron Curtain.
Validating these underground bands in the West just put a lot of pressure on the Soviets. That opens up everything.
Attention abroad ultimately pushed Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev to legalize the rock underground at home, just one of a series of reforms under his program of perestroika aimed at opening up the USSR and pacifying restless Soviet youth. But those who documented the era argue the Kremlin was trying to contain an unstoppable push by young Soviets for more of everything. Photographer Natasha Vasilieva Hall says she likes to think the rock club played a role in what happened next.
It took only about 10 years for the Soviet power to collapse after rock club was opened. And this isn't an accident. This is the direct cause and effect, reason and a result.
Today, the bands of the Leningrad Rock Club, which closed in the mid-90s, remain among Russia's most revered, even among a new generation of musicians, like Roman Karetnikov of the group Nobody's Home. The club is a religion. It's the cathedral of the Russian underground, he says, and an enduring symbol of resistance and freedom. Even in a new era of government pressure, songs from the Leningrad 80s music scene, such as Kino's Peremen, with its rousing chorus We're Waiting for Change, remain a staple at protests in Russia, as well as at this rally last year following a rigged election in neighboring Belarus. The Leningrad Rock Club, like the Soviet Union, is long gone, but the tug and pull between authority and youth is as present and unpredictable as ever. For NPR News, I'm Charles Maines in St. Petersburg, Russia.